Hello, everybody, and welcome into another episode of the Make Comics podcast. This is the first episode of 2017, if you're following along in real time. And if you're not following along in real time, also still the first episode of 2017. The little bit of a gap we had was because of holidays and Andy being sick, which you might hear in his voice, or you might not, because of how well he's disguising it. We were just talking about New Year's resolutions and watching TV and reading books, which is not the purpose of the podcast, but already I feel like my 2017 is having a lot more of both of those, which is not a bad thing.
Yeah, and being completely sick, I mean, keeping up with the podcast has been difficult. I was injured in December with a soccer injury where I sprained my thumb. Don't ask me how you hurt your hand in a game where you don't use hands. But that really slowed my work output down. And then I come back from the holiday and I get just killed by this cold. My wife works at a preschool and she likes to bring various plagues home. So I apologize. But the upside of all of this, I'm starting to come out of the cold. My hands a lot better. But the upside of all of this is that not being able to focus allowed me to sit on the couch and watch a lot of TV. So.
Welcome to Man in the High Castle talk.
Which I don't normally do. So I was just saying I'd watch the entire first season of Man in the High Castle, which I thought was excellent. And just started watching Orphan Black, about five episodes into that. And my wife and I checked out the first two episodes of Justified, which is a show I've wanted to watch for, I don't know, about 6 years now or something.
sounds like about how long it's been on, or maybe off. I'm not even sure anymore.
Yeah, so there's been some serious TV watching in the last 2 weeks. But I apologize for being away from the podcast. I hope you guys didn't miss us too much. I hope you were able to survive without an episode.
It's the first of the year. There's a lot going on. I'm sure people had lots of Make Comics plans to make. Or I also started watching a different TV show. I started The Expanse, which I enjoyed quite a lot. It's now on Amazon Prime. And boy, I like a lot about that. And, you know, it's funny because he says, trying to get the segue into the question, a lot of different structures on TV now for what you can watch, and leads us into structuring scenes in comics. We have a question that came in last year from Andrew Ryan, and Andrew actually says he's going to be joining the Creator Workshop as a Christmas gift, which is great to hear. Hopefully that has kicked off and you're enjoying that, Andrew. Andrew says, I've been studying story structure to make my scripts more cohesive, but I wonder your take on Swain scene structure as it pertains to the comic book medium. Does the goal, conflict, disaster, reaction, dilemma, decision model work for comics? Movies, TV shows, and novels have so much more freedom in regards to amount of dialogue, framing a full scene, etc., and I wonder if scene structure in a comic book can still fit into the scene sequel model, having the most trouble fitting a full scene into the medium without either A, putting far too much dialogue on a single page, or B, having a single scene eat up precious extra pages that could otherwise further more plot. So that is, again, from Andrew Ryan, and I will admit to having to look up the Swain scene structure, which turns out to be from a book written by Don Swain, who talks about selling your writing. And we talked about this a little bit before we started. Andy, do you want to jump in and kind of go through your thoughts on basic scene structure? And we kind of boiled it down to some, maybe how we're naming different acts and how you want to call it, as well as the overall structure.
And just a quick correction. It's Dwight Swain.
My bad.
Not Don. It's I'm assuming that is a male and not a female. So real quickly, I'll kind of go through what the Swain scene structure is. Basically, what he says is that there are that a scene follows this pattern. And I Googled this and I'm reading it off the internet. So this is summarized by somebody else and I'm just repeating it to you. But a scene, according to Swain, Has a goal in which we know what the character wants, and it has to be clearly defined. There's a conflict, a series of obstacles that keep the character from achieving the goal, and then the disaster, which makes the character fail to achieve the goal. And that's the structure that Swain says is a scene. And then a sequel, the structure is a reaction, the emotional follow-through from the disaster, a dilemma, a situation with no good options, and then a decision. The character makes a choice which sets up a new goal and therefore would theoretically roll into the next scene. So Joey and I were kind of talking about this. I had to look this up too, so I have not read the book. It may be handled, I'm sure it has a lot more detail in the actual book. But if I take this summary at face value, what first occurs to me is that there's nothing in here that I disagree with per se. Only I'm not really sure why sequel isn't just a scene. Mm-hmm. because it still does everything that a scene is supposed to do, which is it keeps the story moving forward, it keeps the characters moving forward, it has turning points, and that's really the function of a scene, is to start one way, have a turning point, at least one turning point, it could have more than one, and then end with your character or your situation going off in a different direction. And that different direction doesn't have to be, a complete 180. It can be just taking a different tack. But basically the idea is, if you start a scene with one way, it can't end basically in the same place. It's got to move. And both, as Swain puts it, a scene or a sequel, they do that because they have that, those same mechanisms. So I would sort of say, like, this, the way it's described as a scene sounds like a scene, but the way the sequel is described also sounds like a scene. It's just a different, it's just a scene that has a different kind of outcome. The way he describes a scene, it sounds like it's plot driven, and what he calls the sequel sounds like it's more character driven. But any good scene should have, should have a bit of both. So I'm not really sure that I would say, hey, this is the wave of the future. But if it's helpful, and if it's helpful to look at goal, conflict, disaster, reaction, dilemma, decision, if that's helpful to you as a writer, or as an artist, if you're looking for, the emotional beats to put into your storytelling, then use it. Like, I'm never going to say, like, don't read somebody's book. Swain may have a lot of great insights in this book. Again, I haven't read it, but how it applies to comics. I mean, there are scenes in comics as there are in novels and in movies and in television. So it applies the same way, I think, to comics that it would anything else. The specifics that Andrew's talking about too much dialogue in a scene, or having a scene, eat up too much space. Those are difficult to overcome. They take a lot of practice. But there are definitely things that you can do to minimize those. And one of the things that I think it's very common for writers who are still sort of, in the beginning phase of writing for comics, it's very, very common for the dialogue to be verbose. And there are a couple of things that are helpful. One is the easiest thing to do is to look at your dialogue. And look, I've been writing comics and other things now for, over 10 years professionally, and editing them. I should clarify that as well. So like, one of the first things that you learn to do is look at what your panel descriptions are calling for, and make sure you're not repeating information in your dialogue that should be clear in your panel description. Now, sometimes I will leave a line of dialogue in just in case that part comes in and it isn't clear. If it's sort of a complex thing, like, I'll leave a line of dialogue or a caption or whatever that hammers that point home. But if the art comes in and it's clear, you know, I'll flag that and I'll delete it if it's not needed. But the easiest way for your dialogue and whatnot to get verbose is you're repeating information, either information that is being communicated visually that you don't have to actually say with words, or it's very easy to sort of repeat the same things about a character or about a thing. Like I wrote a script last night, actually, and I realized that, you know, in my notes, I had to make it clear that 20 years had passed from one point to another. And the way I opened up the scene, there's a caption that says, you know, mission date, you know, whatever. And it's pretty clear from that caption that 20 years has passed. And then a page later, because I had it in my initial notes, that this guy wakes up from cryo sleep or whatever and is wondering how long it's been. And he's told it's been 20 years, except I don't need that now, because I covered it in that caption. It wasn't really my plan to cover it in that caption, but it worked out that way, and I could make that I could eliminate that panel completely, which eliminated two or three lines of dialogue. So that's one of the main things, is eliminating repeated information. Another main thing is also just realizing what information you actually need and cutting out everything else. So a lot of times, you know, we've got a lot we want to say about our characters. We know a lot about our characters, and so we kind of go on about our characters and what they're thinking about or what they can do. And you realize that you just don't need, you don't need all of that. You can convey something in a more economical way, or you don't need to convey it at all. So it's a lot about, you know, to make it sound super fun, it's a lot about data management. And there are lots of techniques for that, and the thing about writing comics, writing for any medium, quite honestly, is when you start out and you're doing something for the first time, you know, whether it's writing for TV, animation, comics, video games, whatever it is, it's you have to pay attention to so many things. You're looking at your scene structure, you're looking at your character arcs, you're looking at your turning points, you're looking at how the visuals are playing out. Is it visually interesting? What are you communicating visually? And you're trying to minimize your dialogue and captions as you go. So it's a ton to track, and you kind of have to track it all. And that's a lot of what the methodology that, you know, that I teach in my intro to comics writing course, a lot of that methodology is about how to track those while at the same time not juggling them all at the same time. So there are techniques that I developed that help you break it down into bite-sized pieces, but it still helps, but you can still track. Mm-hmm. and you can modify as you go. And I don't know that a lot of people would pinpoint that as one of the more useful things about the course, but I think it is one of the more useful things about the course, because most people come in, and if they've written some scripts that, you know, and they don't have much training in writing or in comics writing specifically, their scripts tend to be pretty long, and by the time they get through with the course, their scripts are significantly shorter in length, but clearer and often more tightly put together. And that's a lot. That's, you know, one of the things that I think you know, that course can help with. So yes, of course, I'd like people to take my comics writing class, but any writing class, any art or storytelling class, filmmaking class, whatever, you're going to learn techniques and useful things from any of those types of things, and books too. Obviously, you know, there's books and articles and all that sort of stuff. So, but that's what I'd say. I mean, at this point, the first thing I'd look at if I were to suggest something to Andrew is data management. Because that sounds so cool. that's my take on it. I think this is interesting. I'd be curious. I'm not going to get to it anytime soon because I'm so far behind on work and still not feeling well. But I'd be curious to actually take a read of Dwight Swain's book myself at some point.
Dwight Swain, not Don.
his, not Dawn.
His less successful sibling. I think, you know, we talked about it a little bit before we started recording, the 2 points that Ryan made at the end of the most trouble fitting a full scene into the medium without either A, putting too much dialogue on a single page, or having a single scene eat up precious extra pages. You touched on it. I think a lot of that's just experience. And I know for me, I was so verbose with everything, with panel description, with dialogue, and with just not being economical with the thinking of structure. And the first time I had somebody draw roughs of what I had written, and then I saw them, I realized, oh, wow, I overwrote everything. And for me, at least, it's just been it's all become about paring down, and how do you keep paring down to get to the information that you need? And it is just becomes the economy of everything, and realizing how a comic works in relation to whatever other writing background you might have, or in this case, you know, coming at it from reading a book that might have a different push the way it's talking with film and TV and novels, where you do have a ton more room and a different relationship with your reader and the way you're getting information across. So for me, it was definitely a lot of learning as I went. And once I had everything done, I actually started thumbnailing my own stuff when I was doing shorter stories. And that helped tremendously, because I would thumbnail everything. I would write it, and then I would go back and thumbnail everything. And then after I had everything, I'd go back and I would do my comparisons then and start axing pieces and figuring out, oh, this is how I make this flow better. And, you know, just from a draft standpoint, it still helps to go back and figure out how the page could lay out structurally once everything's written, and then make that a part of a second or third draft, and, you know, keep honing in and thinking differently than just the Word document that I have.
Yeah, one of the things that's been interesting for me, a little over a year ago, I started working on a graphic novel, and the way we're doing it, it's going to be published landscape oriented, so not a vertical, regular North American looking comic, but like if you took that, turned it on its side, and then stapled it on what would have been the bottom, that's how it's going to wind up being published. And one of the things that I realized, you know, writing that, and I'm co-writing it with a friend of mine, but is that I needed to start thumbnailing in that landscape, just to see how it works. So I'd write pages, and then I'd quickly doodle them and try it. And it would take me a while to figure out how to make it work. And sometimes it didn't. And I'd go in and I'd rewrite, because, you know, on a vertical page, on a portrait oriented page, you know, typically you're thinking, you know, for a sort of a normal North American comic, you're thinking in terms of, like, you basically have three tiers with maybe two or three panels, you know, one, two or three panels on each tier typically. But when you change the orientation, you're looking at, like, do I have two tiers now that have one, two, three or four panels on them? And so yeah, and I was kind of used to writing in terms of thinking of panels being kind of vertically oriented, and unlike a movie screen. So it was interesting. You know, I had to change the way I was writing, and I would thumbnail, and it was all very helpful. And I felt like I really learned a lot doing that. And the project's not finished yet, so, you know, I'm still learning from it, and learning as we do balloon placements. So anytime you're experimenting, anytime you're gaining experience, you're experimenting, you're doing something a little outside of the norm, you know, I think you're improving your skills, even, and that can happen even if the project itself winds up not being better than the one you did before. You'll probably still learn a lot. Hopefully that doesn't happen. Hopefully everything you do is better than the last thing. But yeah, and kind of the point about, you know, this is all about learning those fundamentals and getting them ingrained. And which I'm going to go ahead and just shamelessly plug, since this is going live pretty soon. It's 2017. It's a great year to start making comics. And if you're interested in learning and really getting into those fundamentals of storytelling, we have Intro to Comic Book Writing coming up. It's not sold out yet. That's starting on February 1st. We have, starting that same night, Intro to Comic Book Coloring. And then on February 6th, we have comic book lettering and production starting, and intro to comic book art starting. So we've got our fundamental classes all starting that first week of February, starting on the 1st of February. So it's intro to writing, intro to art, intro to color, and lettering and production. And if that's not enough, then we just announced last week, I think, that on March 18th, we are doing a one-day master seminar with comics writer Mark Wade on comic script writing, and it is going to be amazing. It's one day only, one time only. So so I'd hop on that if that interests you too. But that actually will take place after any and all of those courses would end, I believe. Maybe lettering would have one more week going on, but they don't conflict on an actual day. So we got a lot going on, a lot of great stuff for people really looking to get started, up their game. We aim to please. They're all taught by pros, all that stuff. Check out the website at comicsexperience.com. Check them out on courses, and you can read all about it. They're good. Of course, I think they're good. It's my stuff. It's my company. But we really do try to bring this all to a professional level. Start with beginner and get you to professional level at the end of, you know, 6 or 7 weeks, depending on the course.
It is a great way to kick off the year too, to have the courses that you have laid out. Plus, Mark Wade, you know, anytime he's involved in anything, I feel like I learn a lot by somebody that's got such a kind of diverse background and stuff that he's written, and having his, I think, editorial experience, I'm sure, informs some of that. I understand the Sunday afterwards, you're having the Stump Mark Wade with Superman trivia. Is that
Well, no one ever has, so we just canceled the event. Now, you know, one of the funny things about you know, Mark and my history with Mark is that I was an assistant editor when on Fantastic Four, when he and Mike Ringo were doing that book, and so I had the pleasure of being one of his editors on that, and we became, you know, certainly friendly, if not friends, during that time. But then when I left editorial and went freelance, he gave me my very first freelance professional writing gig for comics, which was a 4-issue miniseries called Challenger Deep when he was editor-in-chief at that time at Boom Studios. And so I edited him, and then when I went freelance, he was like my first editor. And so we both have edited and written for the other one. And a real quick, funny story. He touched up my dialogue in a scene in the first issue of Challenger Deep. And so when the printed comic came out, I read it and I was like, wow, this scene's pretty good. And then I went and checked out my script, and I realized that's because, Mark had significantly helped out the dialogue, and I mean, I was thrilled and happy. I mean, you know, so I sent him this email where I was 100% joking, saying like, "How dare you change my words?" and blah blah blah. I was joking. He did not realize that I was joking, and fired back this email immediately that was, you know, just so apologetic, and he would never want anybody to do that to him as a writer, and he thought he had, you know, sent me the stuff, and then I felt terrible, but it was very funny. But I suggest that if you get a writing gig writing comics, that you just have Mark Wade rewrite it for you.
I think that's seminar number 3, how to get Mark Wade to rewrite your dialogue.
Yeah. No, and it was amazing, and it was really funny too, because I mean, it wasn't so significantly rewritten. It was clearly the scene I had written, but he just tightened that dialogue, kind of like what we were talking about, had just tightened the dialogue all up. So I read that scene, I was like, wow, that actually worked better than I imagined. I go back, I check my script, and I was like, oh, it's because Mark Wade is awesome, and he really helped me out. So I told him I would willingly take credit for his writing anytime.
Yeah, maybe I needed to get we need to get him on the show just so I can figure out how to get that perk as well.
But yeah, he's amazing. He's clearly one of the best comic book writers. I think I can say this without much debate anywhere on the internet. One of the finest comic book writers of all time. It is a real pleasure and kind of a, I don't know if a coup is the right word, but it's just really exciting and awesome to have him coming in.
And I maybe it wasn't the first time, maybe it was, but I so distinctly remember realizing when he was writing The Flash that his setup to each issue was such a great way to execute the idea that every comic is somebody's first, which may not apply in terms of the way people read comics now, but at the time when there was a much more broader representation of newsstand presence as well as comic shops, his Flash comics always started with, "My name is Wally West, I'm the Flash, I'm the fastest man alive," and then he would hit what was happening with the backfill. So it was never like, let me tell you about this thing that happened last issue. It was always either set up to the continuation of what was going on, or maybe he was introducing something new. And it just stood out in my mind as such a great device to introduce us, but also a great way to just kind of keep a cool, consistent thing with the Flash. And he could do twists on it as it went, and it always stuck out for me.
Yeah, I mean, he's a master of so many aspects of form, of structure, of dialogue, of plot twists. He's ridiculous. Sometimes I hate him because he's so ridiculously talented. But it's interesting because, you know, the Flash TV show starts with that. The opening credits with the music and everything starts with, "My name's Barry Allen, I'm the fastest man alive," you know, and it recaps his origin real quickly for you. It's smart. I mean, I do think that, in different projects vary to different degrees how much is true, but I do think that there's still something to the idea that every comic is somebody's first, and maybe now you might change it to every trade paperback is somebody's first, but I think there's something to that, and I think if you are thinking, especially something, you know, really serialized like Amazing Spider-Man or something that's been serialized for 70 years. If you're looking at that and you're thinking, "I don't need to recap who Peter Parker is," I think you're doing yourself a disservice, as well as your readers. If it's a miniseries like Challenger Deep, where it's clearly four issues, then maybe not quite as much. But yeah. There it is.
Mark,
I still have a cold, so I'm kind of. I just sort of trailed off there. Sorry.
Mark Wade talk. I think that's got to be the spinoff, at least for March. No, you should definitely check out the information on the seminar at comicsexperience.com, or you can email info@comicsexperience.com if you have a question or a topic you'd like to hear discussed on the show, or you can tweet @comicexperience on Twitter. That's without the S. And Andy, or one of the folks that works with Andy on the Twitter feed, will get that question in. Andrew, thanks for writing in, and it sounds like a great. I don't know where you are in your comics making career, but it sounds like you're off to a great start with what you're doing and what you're consuming to get there. So hopefully this answered the question. Until next time, keep making comics.